From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made this past summer in Rio during the Summer Olympic Games. On a Thursday morning, the Daily Beast published an article written by a straight, married male writer. That writer used an app, a so-called hookup app, to essentially lure in gay Olympians. That writer, Nico Hines, explained that the point of this piece was to find out whether a non-athlete could walk around the Olympic Village and find a way into the wild parties and club scene for athletes. But really, the piece was all about using an app called Grindr, which is designed for gay men, and Hines implying that gay people are more promiscuous. And the piece goes on to out several gay Olympians from other countries by name. These are athletes from countries that are rather repressive, not at all friendly to gay people. Slate.com called the piece vile. The Daily Beast took it down and published an apology, with the editors writing, quote, "We apologize to the athletes who may have been inadvertently compromised by our story. We did not uphold a deep set of the Daily Beast's values, these values which include standing up to bullies and bigots, and specifically being a proudly, steadfastly supportive voice for LGBT people all over the world, are core to our commitment to journalism and to our commitment to serving our readers," end quote. Well, since August, we've discussed ways that we can follow up on that story, that troubling story. And today we're going to examine the danger of outing gay people who don't want to be outed, but not necessarily in foreign countries. We're also talking about the challenges of deciding to come out on your own. Here at home, coming out might be easier than it was years ago, but it still carries some risks. And one of my guests is a local pastor in the faith community who not that long ago came out, but he's found that the African-American faith community in particular is not always welcoming to gay people. That pastor is Malik McFarley Sample. Honored to have you in studio. Pastor Malik, great to have you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. It's an honor.
And Scott Fearing is the executive director of the Gay Alliance. He's here as well. Scott, welcome to you.
It's great to be back, Evan.
It's been about 3 months since that Daily Beast piece came out, Scott. And, yep. You know, your career has been, you know, you've worked in so many different areas, but I know you've seen over the years what happens when people are outed when they're not ready for it. I'm imagining people in other countries. What was your reaction to that piece?
It was pretty terrifying, and I was glad to see the storm that erupted over them publishing this piece. And absolutely, one has to take into account where those athletes were coming from, because there are still countries in this world that admitting to being a homosexual is a death penalty, and people are put to death for it. And it's not as uncommon as one would like to think. The way I look at homophobia and anti-LGBT issues is, these days it's really a question of geography more than anything else. So, for instance, here in Rochester at the Gay Alliance, we get calls regularly from folks who are outside of the city. So living in a rural environment, living in a place that isn't quite as welcoming. You know, the schools may be great and fine in Rochester or the immediate suburbs, but you get out a few rings and things aren't as bright. So homophobia still exists. It's still an issue. Being out, living an authentic life, an honest life, can still be problematic, can still be dangerous for folks.
Yeah, and so as we tried to get our heads around how to tell this story and to work through these issues, yeah. I think maybe a story for another day that we had discussed but we're not doing today is, I'd love to hear more from Nico Hines on how in the world you get to the point where you think you should do something like this. And I hope he is sorry. He has hidden for the last 3 months and he hasn't even responded to emails, which is too bad. Yeah. But, you know, maybe that's a discussion for another day. I think what Scott helped us see was that we can focus on the impact on these athletes and people in other countries, and we should, by the way. I mean, yep. Being allies means in your own community, but also a voice for people in really challenging places. But we also shouldn't be complacent that things, as you just mentioned, are perfectly easy here. Right. If you want to come out here, a lot of people just assume, well, it's different now.
Yeah.
And it is different now, but it doesn't mean it's perfect now.
It is different. And, I mean, that's the most amazing thing of my career in 30 years of watching this stuff happen and the change happen, is things are very different. You know, it was dangerous for me, you know, in my professional life for quite a while. That's not the case now in the same way. So, again, it really has to do with geography and sort of, it's very situational as far as the danger goes.
It's amazing. You look at this list that Megan Mack, producer, just handed me here. 17 countries, there are bans in place to prohibit propaganda interpreted as promoting LGBT communities or simply LGBT identities and people. So, essentially, gay bans in these countries: Algeria, Egypt, Libya, Morocco, Nigeria, Somalia, Tunisia, Iraq, Iran, Jordan, Kuwait, Lebanon, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Syria, Lithuania, and Russia. 40 countries retain a, quote, gay panic clause, mm-hmm. which people can use, wow, as a defense for committing crimes including assault or murder.
Yep.
They can say they were provoked because a person was gay, lesbian, or bisexual.
Yeah.
Wow. Amazing.
And if we go back in our own history, when Matthew Shepard was murdered, that was the defense that those young men tried to use for why they murdered him in the atrocious way that they did, because he supposedly tried to hit on them, and they were so disgusted and turned off that they panicked under the face of homosexuality and had to respond with the vicious violence against him.
Well, you know, so again, I mean, I think this international research is important to keep in mind as a backdrop because, you know, you talk about the work going on and how far there is to go.
Yeah. But, well, I want to jump in and just say that international angle also plays out here in Rochester. So we have a number of individuals here who are from some of those countries that you just listed off who have come here for student visas, for instance, or for other reasons of travel, things like that. And they're terrified to go home. I've talked to individuals from Nigeria. I've talked to individuals from Egypt who are here in Rochester and are trying to seek asylum because they know if they go home, now that they've outed themselves maybe on Facebook or they've seen that it's okay to be gay, that if they go home, they're likely to have even their own family turn them in. And so this does play out here in Rochester.
And here's why I wanted to frame this up this way. You may hear those statistics and the situation in other countries for gay people, and you may think, well, not no one, sadly it happens, but it's very unlikely you're going to get killed for being gay anymore, or, you know, bullying happens at all levels, but it's just different. You're not going to be arrested, et cetera, et cetera. Wait till you hear Pastor Malik's story, though. I mean, you think about how far we've come, but you think about what people can still lose. So, Malik, you're 25 years old now, right?
Yes.
You grew up in Rochester?
Yes, born and raised.
And, he's a pretty popular guy in the faith community. In fact, you started preaching when you were how old?
14 years old.
Why did you want to do that?
I just felt like it was my life's call. It's definitely something that is genetic. I believe that I feel like it's a gift that it is that I have. And I definitely want to serve it to the community.
So you're 14 years old and you started preaching where?
The first place that I ever preached was a place called Bethel Christian Fellowship right here on East Avenue. Mm-hmm. That was my first time ever preaching. I actually got ordained as pastor at the age of 20. I actually pastored one church in two locations, ministry here in Rochester and ministry also in a place called Lockport. I personally came out on Facebook at the age of 22. I used to travel back and forth. I didn't need a job, you know. I traveled back and forth, and I just came to the point where I said enough is enough. I'm not going to live the life that people wanted me to live. And so as within the black spiritual faith community, you know, they just want you to have a wife, you know, and, you know, live the regular pastor, quote unquote, life, you know. But I said, I came to a point where I had to be true. And when you come true to yourself, it's the most powerful thing that you can ever do. And going against the grain for me is something that I hold dear because you can never really change something if you don't confront it.
Sure, and I'm thinking of, think about young African Americans in our own community who are gay, who don't know.
Correct.
If they feel, they're going to feel supported. They look at someone as popular as you, in demand as you. You know, Malik, when he was a pastor, even, you again, ordained at 20, you're getting phone calls. People want you to show up. They want you to preach to them. They want you to talk to them. All of a sudden, someone as popular as you, that's a signal to young people.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely believe that because I never would have really knew how much inspiration I had on my life until I came out. You know, it was that defining moment that showed me I really appreciate what you did because you sacrifice your reputation, you sacrifice everything that it is that you have done to represent someone like me, you know, and those are a lot of testimonies, a lot of messages that I have gotten. And I would have never realized that or seen that until I actually made that decision. I actually came out on Facebook.
So, listeners, as we work through Malik's story here and his experience, if you want to share your own stories or weigh in with any questions or comments, you can call the program. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We're talking about the challenge of coming out and the experience for people in different communities. Now, Malik is a pastor who probably knew, and we'll talk about this in a moment, probably knew that there may be some backlash. But let's kind of go back a little bit here. So in your teenage years, you were preaching, you kind of knew this was your path. What were the circumstances you grew up in? You grew up in Rochester.
Yes.
How was life growing up for you?
Life growing up for me was pretty good. It was pretty good. I actually lived and was raised right on Cornhill area. Mm-hmm. So my teenage years was pretty good. I was raised in a very, legalistic, Christian, traditional, African-American home, mm-hmm. And it was a lot of things that, in that place that we could and could not do, a lot of things, that they never allowed us to do as young children, which, tradition is good,
Would you call it strict grown up?
Very.
Okay.
Very much so. Very, very, very much so strict.
Okay. And in some ways, I wonder if you feel like that was good for you.
It's kind of bittersweet. Sometimes you eat the meat, spit out the bone. Some were good. Some was good. Some was, But I definitely take it into account that I'm glad of my upbringing. Mm-hmm. But just as in size, when it came down to lifestyle, which was definitely the breaking point.
Okay. Now, when did you know you were gay?
I'm going to say around 17, 18.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. And had it, these are such strange questions to ask for, mm-hmm. The typical straight white guy, but everybody's got a different experience,
Right, absolutely.
We've talked to friends who said, I knew, 8 years old, 10 years old. Mm-hmm. And then for some people it's different. Did you suspect at any point, and did you resist it at all in your teenage years?
Absolutely.
You did. Okay.
Absolutely. For a young preacher coming up, two churches, traveling, all of those things, you would never want to say, hey, I'm gay, or hey, I'm LGBT. It was something that at that moment in time, I had so many people following me, I had family members following me, back and forth to, different churches and traveling with me, out of state. And it was definitely a lot of pressure because you can find yourself sometimes living for people instead of living for yourself. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, definitely within the African-American community, especially in church, they find themselves in that position all the time because you have pressure from family. You have pressure from the church. You have pressure from the leaders that are in the church. You just have pressure all around,
Okay. And so you're 17, 18 years old. You're figuring this out about yourself. And did you think at any point, I can repress this, or did you go through that mentality that said, I can't let anybody know this? Mm-hmm. what was your mindset as you worked through that?
My mindset really switched and it changed around the age of 20, 21, 22. Mm-hmm. I came to a point where it was the situation of my sexuality and my identity became a mental issue at that point. And, me, I've always been a truthful, open-hearted individual. And I came to a point where I said to God, I said, how could something be so wrong, feel so right? And for me to believe in this means for me to not believe in everything that I was taught, that was taught to me, what I believe, what I stood on, what the traditions,
sure.
The religion, all of those things, for someone to sit, for me to sit there, I have to sit there and say, this is so wrong, but it feels so right. I just came to a point where I said, I can't live for people anymore. I can't live for what people wanted to frame my life to be. And I have to live for who it is that I am, even though it defies the norm.
All right, we're going to continue with the story as we go throughout, but I know we're going to get some comments here and there for people who want to just sort of either, you know, kind of give you a little high five or et cetera. And I know Susan in Fairport wants to weigh in, so we're going to continue with Malik's story in a moment. But Susan, go ahead.
Hi, Evan. Such a pleasure to talk to you and this young man, this wonderful pastor. I'm so very proud of him that he decided to live who God made him to be. And I just wanted to share my story of my son coming out. He is also about 25, and we lived in Fairport, which is very accepting and whatnot, but he finally told us his story of how he was feeling in his senior year of high school. And we kind of advised him not to say anything just because we were afraid for him. And he had wonderful support, a wonderful family and friends. He's doing great, but he decided to try to live his life as a straight man. He really wanted to, but he finally came to the point where he wanted to be himself. He wanted to live who he was. And I was so proud of him. And he came out also on Facebook. So that was kind of
Facebook is a place
but,
for some.
I mean, he came out to his family slowly. And as somebody wise told him, he said, "You're going to be coming out for the rest of your life. It's not like you do it once." Mm-hmm. Because he, in my opinion, of course, I'm his mom. He's a very handsome young man. And ladies come up to him all the time, and he has to tell them the bad news.
Susan, I can tell you as a straight man, Malik is a very good-looking man. I'm sure he's been dealing with that, too.
It happens.
I'm sure he is. I can't see him through the radio. But I just wanted to say I am so very proud of you because I can't imagine how brave it had to be to take those steps, especially in a more religious setting. I was raised, my son was raised Catholic, and it was very hard to walk into a place where, you know, at the hierarchy, did not accept my son for who he was. It is exactly who he is. And my final comment is, if I had a magic wand to make him straight, I wouldn't do it for $1 million. He's perfect the way he is. I love him. He has a heart of gold. And I'm just very proud of you. I just wanted to say that.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you very much. I do appreciate
you, your authentic life, and I wish you all the best. But I do understand the Facebook thing coming out, and it worked. So I was very happy to hear that.
Susan, thank you so much for the phone call. Some thoughts for her, Malik? Go ahead.
I definitely appreciate it very, very much. It is definitely hard, and I definitely appreciate the encouragement. It definitely helps me out, and I'm definitely proud of your son.
Well, you know, when she says, you know, he had for a while decided he wanted to try to live as a straight man. I mean, I could try to live as a Jedi Knight. It's not going to happen. That's not what I am. I could try to live as, you know, Kyrie Irving. I would love to be Kyrie Irving. That's not happening either. Right. And there's certain things we are and certain things we're not. But Malik, for you, 17, 18 years old, you realize you're gay. But how many people knew at that point? You didn't come out until you were 22?
Right.
All right. So how many people knew at that point? Any family, friends?
Some friends, yes. Being a preacher, you really try to keep it on the. I'll say it like this: it's kind of like a don't ask, don't tell policy. Being in that position, and in that occupation, it's a don't ask, don't tell policy.
It's interesting you put it that way because I want to read from the Human Rights Campaign, and the language that Malik just used as a pastor is very similar to what the Human Rights Campaign cites as pretty common in African-American faith communities. So let me go ahead and just read these two paragraphs from ARC, HRC, the Human Rights Campaign. Quote, "The black church, the oldest institution and pillar of the black community, has historically dictated the community's stance on homosexuality. Either you don't talk about it or you condemn it. It is daunting to come out only to face the fear and misunderstanding of society in general. But many LGBTQ African Americans must face that same ignorance within the very institution that has for so many been the centerpiece of their community. Although no largely African American denomination has issued a public statement outlining its position on homosexuality, the stances of individual churches and ministers are revealed on Sundays. And Mandy Carter, a founder of the progressive organization Southerners on New Ground, says the following, quote, the motto of the black church seems to be, don't name it, don't claim it.
And that's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. It's kind of like, as I was telling Scott earlier, it's kind of like that pink elephant in the room that big pink elephant in the room that nobody wants to talk about it. As long as you don't say anything on it, speak on it, everything is okay. And I see that's what the issue is when it comes down to the Black faith community.
Well, and let's talk a little bit about what happened then. So you decided to come out at 22. Mm-hmm. You'd been ordained as a pastor at 20. Did you know that if you came out, this could jeopardize some of your relationships and some of your work?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And as we were talking about the Facebook post, I'll never forget the day that I came out. It was actually July, 4th of July. It was my own personal Independence Day.
Okay.
And I literally sat there with the post on my iPad, and I actually sat there for about 2 minutes because I knew that at this very moment, once I pressed this button,
it's all going to change.
Everything is about to change, and it definitely did.
Well, and how fast did you hear from people? And if, to the best of your memory now, mm-hmm. give me a sense for how fast you heard from people who were saying, I love you the way you are, and how fast did you hear from someone who was not happy?
Well, because it's Facebook and it's very quick.
Yeah.
You know, I was a popular guy. You know, it went very quickly. It was kind of, again, a bittersweet thing, but it's the negative comments from the people that you have prayed for, the ones that you have been on the phone countless hours for and helped, spoken into their life, helped them in any way possible. That's what hurts the most. That's definitely what's impacting in a negative way the most. And it was those defining moments, that told me, well, at this point in my life, maybe there are some other people that I can that can reach that really want to be a part of what it is that we're doing and what God has called me to do as an individual. It's definitely it's a feeling of hurt, a feeling of grief, a feeling of despair. But at the same time, you have the ones that really show you who love you, at the same time.
Did anybody, this may be an odd question, but did anybody surprise you? Did anybody who stood by you, did you think, wow, I didn't know if you were going to stand by me?
There was one. Yeah, there was, I would say there was one. You know, you always have that one in the bunch. Yeah, there were some people that definitely surprised me, and a lot of new relationships that I gained with a lot of people that I never even knew of. So even in the midst of it all things worked out for the good.
Mm-hmm.
All things definitely worked out for the good.
How about your family?
My family, most of the younger individuals in my family were more accepting. I was raised by my grandparents, so the more older ones, not very so much accepting. They're learning to deal with it in a sense, family members, it's kind of a bittersweet thing, down the middle as well.
Did you find any windows to sit down with family and talk to them? Did they ask you to? Did they say, I may not understand it, but I want to talk about it, or did you feel shut out?
From some, shut out. Mm-hmm. From some, very with open arms. You have those certain individuals, because I do have a big family, very, very big family. You're going to have those some that probably never want to speak to you. You're going to have those mm-hmm. ones that will speak to you, but, very... very distant. You have those ones that's going to love you forever, and I appreciate those. You're going to have those ones that, unfriend you on Facebook, don't want to have anything, have anything to do with what it is that you're doing. But at the same time, it's a bittersweet thing. But I believe that it's all working out for the good.
Well, let's get our only break of the hour, and we come back. And when he says it's all working out for the good, we're going to talk about how his life has progressed since then, where he's preaching now. And absolutely. And the way the faith community reacted was, I'm sure Malik was disappointed in some ways. I mean, this was a very popular pastor and someone who, you can just hear him on the radio. In 20 minutes, you can see how charismatic he is and how magnetic a personality he is. And all of a sudden, the phone stops ringing. Places that used to want you to show up on Sundays, they don't call anymore. We're going to talk about that and how we can eventually change that, because this is a, You know, for a gay man, sometimes your identity as a gay man says if people are shutting you out, that's okay. You don't have to, you move past them. But as a pastor, you're sort of a big tent person that says we can all work on building this life together, and that's complicated. So we're going to talk about that as well coming up with our guest for the hour. It's Pastor Malik McFarley Sample, Rochester born and raised, and Scott Fearing, Executive Director of the Gay Alliance, is here. And if you want to jump in on the phones as well and weigh in, you can do that. It's 844-295-TALK. Toll free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Coming up in our second hour, we lighten things up a little. Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark turns 35 years old. It remains one of the most banned series of books in this country. Parents groups, religious groups, they don't like it. They say it's too gory, too macabre, especially for kids. Did you read the books when you were growing up? What were your favorite stories? Why do we like to get scared? Are kids still reading Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark? That's next hour. And welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Before we get back to your phone calls, here's a tweet that I want Scott Fearing to address. Jim writes to me on Twitter and says, "Progress and gains for LGBT people in Rochester doesn't mean that fear and hatred of LGBT people in our community doesn't exist. I recently found out a few years ago, another parent, who is a woman of faith, requested I not be allowed to attend my son's field trip." Those stories, I'm sure, still come up for you, Scott.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the things, again, at the Gay Alliance that we hear regularly from folks. So while things are better here in Rochester than maybe elsewhere, like I said, it is an issue of geography in some ways, but things do still happen here in Rochester, and we do hear from them. And unfortunately, some of the myths, the stereotypes, the misunderstandings still exist, which is one of the reasons that, you know, someone like Malik, who's such an amazing role model, is so important, that he can be out, be honest, live authentically, and be, again, a role model for young people who are looking how to integrate their lives into their identities and pulling it all together.
No doubt. Carol and Irondequoit next on the phones. Go ahead, Carol.
Hi there. I just wanted to say that I have a gay friend. I'm in my mid-60s now, and my friend said to me once that nothing exists in nature that does not serve nature. And by that he meant that being gay is not something abnormal. It's just a feature of humanity, and that in very traditional cultures, oftentimes the gay members of that culture would be the keepers of wisdom or the caretakers. Mm-hmm. And it sounds to me like Reverend Malik is both of those things. And I want to congratulate him for his courage and his service and wish him all the best.
Thank you, Carol. Thanks very much. Go ahead, Malik. What do you think?
Thank you very much. I do appreciate it very much.
Yeah, you know, I think once in a while I hear the argument, Scott, that, well, you know, what percentage of the population is gay? It's, you know, whether it's 2.5% or 11% or something in the middle, it's less typical. Therefore, it's not natural. There are literally millions of examples of things that exist in nature that are less typical than the more typical. It doesn't mean they don't exist in nature.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. One of the things, and I know I've addressed this sitting in this chair in the past, is what is the percentage and how many, you know, LGBT folks are there out there, people who aren't gender conforming, etc. And, you know, if Malik was the only Black pastor of a Pentecostal congregation in the whole world, he still deserves to live a life that's free of violence, that he gets to be authentic and honest with, love and be loved. So numbers don't ultimately really matter.
But it's just, that's so well said. I mean, it's like we're going to set this threshold for tolerance that we will tolerate only if it meets a certain threshold. It's very
There is no line strange in the sand when it comes to tolerance and accepting other human beings. We need to do it.
Thank you for the phone call, Carol. Malik, where can people find you now?
You can actually find me. We have services on first and third Sundays, and that is at 707 East Main Street, right in the heart of downtown, right next, I believe it's across the street from Delta Sonic.
Yes, it is.
And between the, I believe, the theater.
By the Auditorium Theater building.
Yes, correct.
Okay. And what's the congregation?
The congregation's name is actually New Beginnings Christian Fellowship.
New Beginnings Christian Fellowship.
And they're renting space right now from a church called Open Arms Metropolitan Community Church. So the sign out front reads Open Arms, but their congregation is inside.
Correct, correct.
So Malik, when you came out at the age of 22, tell me what the reaction from the faith communities that you had built a relationship was. In, generally speaking, for where you were working and where you were often sort of interacting, visiting, et cetera. Mm-hmm. What was the reaction?
I was very much so, in a sense, shut out, ostracized, just really basically shunned, you know, and especially the Black African-American faith community. I would get voicemails threatening, you know, harassing. Many leaders would write, you know, very inappropriate messages to me on Facebook, you know, words from quote unquote God, you know, that was very distasteful. A lot of rude comments, you know, from different preachers and pastors and different leaders.
How did you react to them when that happened, Malik?
At that point, I came to a point where I said, you know, a reaction doesn't, every action doesn't require a reaction. So I just came to a point where, you know, even though upset, silence is the best response.
Okay. And so you lost some opportunities and things started to change, and kind of take me through what was happening next.
Well, I actually had, at this point, I had two churches. I was pastoring a church here in Rochester and also in Lockport. Mm-hmm. Those ministries did not last. We did have to close them down. But
because of this issue?
Yes. Yes, because of the issue. Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And at that point in your life, I just want to ask you if you doubted your own faith at all. If you felt like, you know, this is my identity, this is my sexuality, my identity is also as a preacher, as a man of God, as someone who was preaching at the age of 14, has found this refuge in the church, but now you're feeling shut out by a lot of people. Did you doubt your faith at all?
In situations like this, it will cause you to, you know, anyone. But I actually increased it. It's kind of like doing something, jumping off a building when someone tells you that you're not going to die, you know, type of thing. I felt that I was moved to do what I did, the decisions in my life. And I felt like at that point and moment, it increased it because this is where my calling was. This is where my destiny that I felt, or my purpose in life, was to be, and to really trailblaze in the midst of this whole thing that took place, was to keep going. So it really increased my faith. It really increased my faith to keep going.
I think that that says a lot about you as a person. I think it says a lot about you as a pastor, that what you were seeing was a human reaction, not an indictment of the God that you see.
Correct.
And I think that's really remarkable. Okay, another brief interlude from a caller. Colin in Rochester wants to jump in. Go ahead, Colin.
Oh, hi, Evan. Hi, Malik. And hi, Scott. I called in because I'm with the Rochester Gay Men's Chorus. And one of the things that I think that we find is that many people are shunned still in this area, or neglected by family because they are gay. And singing in that public forum is a wonderful way to affirm positively whatever your racial background is or community background is, how wonderful it is to be proud to be gay and to perform in front of audiences as large as 200 or 850.
Hmm. Yeah, go ahead, Scott.
Well, I was just going to thank you, Colin, for calling in. You're absolutely right that that idea of visibility for the community still remains incredibly important and is what changes hearts and minds. I mean, the work that the Men's Chorus does, the work that the Bowling League does, the annual Pride celebration, all of those things help to change the hearts and minds of individuals who are wrestling with understanding their own family members sometimes or their friends or just the issues overall. And so I think that, again, maybe I've been too cavalier to say things in Rochester are a lot better, but I do think that they are a lot better, but there's still a lot of work that has to be done. And at the Gay Alliance, our main mission is to try to get community visibility. So that's why we opened the LGBTQ Resource Center last December. You know, we've got the largest LGBTQ library on the entire East Coast, you know, 10,000 volumes of books and magazines and movies and resources. So there's lots of reasons that the conversations do need to continue.
Colin, thank you for that phone call. And if you're just joining us, we're talking to Scott Fearing from the Gay Alliance. You just heard him. And we have Pastor Malik McFarley Sample from New Beginnings Christian Fellowship on East Avenue. That's where he is now, 25 years old, been preaching since he was 14, ordained as a pastor when he was 20, came out at 22, had his relationships impacted very strongly and in many ways very negatively by him coming out. But he's willing to live his authentic life, and now I think settling into a good home. How long have you been at New Beginnings there?
We've actually been at New Beginnings for about 2 years now.
Okay, you happy?
Yes, very, very happy. We actually were having services right here on State Street here for about a year and a half, and now, you know, we've actually relocated to our new home on 707 East Main Street.
And how are you finding the relationships with you know, just regular worshipers, people who look up to you? You know, does your sexuality come up? Is it sort of just like, hey, you know, that's just who he is, like, it's moved on? You know, how are things going?
Well, you know, when we closed both churches down, both churches in Buffalo and in Lockport, you know, it was very, you know, despairing. But when we opened up our new church, it definitely was more loving, definitely more accepting, because at this point, there are people who know about my sexuality, and they're more welcome and more accepting to it. You know, I'm blessed to say that, you know, we have people who are heterosexual who come to our ministry, and all of the like, you know. So I believe that when you want something to change, and you know, you have to speak your truth, and then the greatness comes afterwards.
Yeah, if I could just say the one, I don't know if concern is the right word. What I wouldn't want to happen is for you to be the gay minister with the gay church.
Right.
That shouldn't be the way our world works, where we bubble off like
and,
that.
And it happens like that a lot. And one thing that I always say is this, no one can ever say gay pastor. The reason why is this. If I go to Strong Hospital, if I go to General, and my doctor so happens to be LGBT, I never say gay doctor.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
We try to label our sexuality with our occupation, and our sexuality has nothing to do with our actual occupation. We are who we are. I am who I am. So I believe that definitely, like you said, Evan, people in society should not take that label and add it to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, like, listen, if I were a gay Christian looking for a home where I felt welcome, mm-hmm. I would be very much drawn to a pastor who I knew happened to be gay, and I totally get that.
Right.
I guess what I'm saying is I'm sorry to hear that the reaction was what it was when you came out.
Right, right.
But I hope that that becomes sort of this relic.
Absolutely.
That sure, that gay Christians are going to feel comfortable, maybe more comfortable with you, but at the same time, hopefully people of all Christian backgrounds will feel comfortable with you. You know?
Right.
Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, one of the things that's important when we look at the LGBTQ community, oftentimes individuals are suffering from what I call wounded attachments. Mm-hmm. And these are places that most people in the world go to find attachments.
Right.
Around their faith, around their family, sometimes even around their jobs. And historically, LGBT folks are oftentimes rejected by those places.
Exactly.
And so for there to be a congregation led by someone like Malik. And we've got other churches in town that are very welcoming and accepting. I mean, I think our Pride Parade last year had 50-some congregations marching. So there are lots of accepting congregations. But again, his role as a role model, specifically really within the Black churches in town, is an additional hurdle that he's helping to move beyond.
Well, let's talk about that. Malik, do you know of other Black gay pastors, ministers?
In Rochester?
I mean, they do exist in the world. I'm certain of
yes,
that.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
But I mean, it may be harder to be out. So do you know of any other in Rochester?
No.
Yeah, okay.
No.
I
believe that we are the only inclusive affirming ministry within the Black community at this point.
Okay.
I've heard from other Black churches that say that they are welcoming, but I've not seen them do the kind of outreach, and definitely don't have a out minister leading the
way. Sure. And certainly, you know, let me just say it's important to know. I don't know from church to church and congregation to congregation what the position is, what the reaction is, just how welcoming. So I don't want to have someone assume we're talking about every single church and every single congregation. But I think generally speaking, we can ask a question here, Malik. Mm. How are we going to get to the point where, for example, the Human Rights Campaign doesn't view the African-American faith community as either indifferent or even hostile to LGBT? What are the steps we can take to start moving that?
I feel like as though you can't change what you avoid. So I believe that there definitely needs to be to confront the situation.
Like, don't ask, don't tell is just not working.
It's not working, and it's not going to work. You know, you have a lot of preachers and you have a lot of pastors, you know, who will allow a person of LGBT to sing in their choirs, to, you know, be their musicians and, you know, certain things like that of that nature, which is a reality.
But don't talk about it.
But don't talk about it. As long as you don't say anything about it. See, you know, I want to say that a lot of people, I want to say that I believe that they knew that I was LGBT even before I came out, but it was the fact that I opened up my mouth and said it was what caused the uproar. So I believe it's about don't say anything, and that's what we need to confront, because we truly need to say something, because it's time out for really trying to live a lie for people. You have to really live your true and authentic self.
Scott, can you characterize your experience talking to gay people of all backgrounds and all different workspaces, the impact of someone who is gay knowing that you can stay as long as you don't acknowledge that you're gay? What does that do to someone?
That forced silence is really painful. And,
yes,
you know, I'm not a
absolutely.
Therapist. I just play one on the radio. and it is one of those things that lead to a great deal of disconnection, dishonesty, and it doesn't feel good, you know. And so individuals who are forced to live a lie or to live in silence aren't good employees. They're not necessarily a good family member, because they're going to find ways to avoid personal conversations, to avoid having, you know, risking that it may slip out. And so it's really important. That's, again, one of the changes I've seen in my life in my 30 years of doing this work, is seeing more people being out, being honest in workplaces, in churches, in families, in schools. And overall, those folks are coming out of it as a much healthier individual.
Yeah, I think of, we've been talking a lot about bubbles lately, and I think that is in many ways due to the election season. And sometimes we don't like to talk about people with different views, or sometimes we don't like to be around people who are not exactly like us. And we've talked about the detrimental effects in a society when we do that. So I think Malik makes a very strong point that says, number one, don't ask, don't tell is hurtful and doesn't help. Mm-hmm. Because just knowing that, hey, you've got gay people in your congregation, you know, hey, you've got gay people at work, and look, life is great. You know, I mean, like that is certainly a step there. But let me be direct with you as a pastor. Mm-hmm. The Human Rights Campaign and others have cited African American spiritual leaders in this country as being very direct themselves about why they are not accepting of gay people in the congregation. And that's because they say it goes directly against their study of God, that it is not what God wants, and that their duty as Christian leaders is to say that directly, sometimes in a way that can sound hurtful, but to be direct. So if you're in a room with local African American pastors and they say, Malik, you know, this is not in the way of God, what do you say?
Me personally, I tell everyone this, in a more of a theological point. There's a lot of things that biblically, that in the Bible, that God did say, but then there's a lot of things in the Bible that God did not say either. You know, and I believe that before the Bible, and especially after the Bible, and even during the Bible, God was still speaking. We cannot contain all of the words that it is that he spoke. But one thing that it is that I do believe is that if your job is not to love someone, you can't live right. If you can't love right, you can't live right. And regardless of how you try to put these scriptures up to say about how someone chooses to love someone else, I feel like as though you are not showing that love and that compassion that God has told us to represent and to show. As I always say, there are so many people that have a Bible and a flashlight trying to figure out where you are when they really need to have a Bible and a mirror trying to figure out where they are.
Here's an email from Emma who says, I'm standing up and applauding your guest today, Evan. Thank you for bringing his story to the radio, and I will be sharing it with friends who have had their own struggles. That's from Emma. So
awesome.
You see the way you're touching people.
Wow, that's
you see
awesome.
That. Have you heard from people in your own congregation who come to you and say, Malik, I'm gay. You've made it easier for me. You've helped me in some way. Have you heard from
Oh, absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. You know, we have awesome church, awesome, wonderful ministry. You know, we have couples that are there that have just been growing, and individuals that have been growing in their faith. You know, it's not even about, you know, sexuality. It's about actually creating an atmosphere, yep, and an environment where Jesus is the focal point of who it is that we worship. And that's all that matters. You know, we our actual service is called Life Service. And life actually is not the word life, it's an acronym where it actually means L-I-F-E, love is for everyone. And that's what we believe at New Beginnings, where we believe that love is for everyone.
Why have I never heard that? That's fabulous. That have you heard that, Scott?
No, I have not heard that.
I
one
know.
Before.
Like, that is
good.
We believe that. We definitely believe that God's love is for everyone. And if we're not showing God's love, then it's not something that we should be displaying if we're representing who he is.
So I was once in rural Minnesota, way up in Grand Rapids, Minnesota, and at a community forum. And it was back probably 15, 20 years ago, at the point when the Bible and religion was being used really harshly to put LGBT folks down. It was when Minnesota was looking at changing its state law to become a more accepting place. And a minister stood up in front of the community forum when it got really heated and said, hey, look, you can pull out a verse or two and claim that it's anti-gay.
Right.
But when you really analyze it, they're really not.
Exactly.
And the ultimate message comes down to two from the Bible. One, thou shalt not judge others.
That's right.
And the second one being, love your neighbor.
That's right.
And if you can live by those two, then you're really getting into the true message that's behind the Bible. And I just want to throw in a quick commercial message. On Wednesday night this week at the LGBT Resource Center here in Rochester, we're actually hosting a class called Homosexuality in the Bible. It's part of our Inquiry, which is a community education forum, 7 p.m., free to come in. And they'll be looking at some of those hit verses from the Bible that are used to bash LGBT folks.
All right,
and
so
talking about it.
Wednesday night, 7 p.m., free and open to the public at the LGBT Resource Center, which is where?
100 College Avenue, right,
okay,
by the
see?
Auditorium Theater.
Perfect
awesome.
Timing for that. And I've got 50 seconds left here. I didn't even mention the fact that you just celebrated 2 years of marriage yourself.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Congratulations
Absolutely.
To that.
Thank you very much.
You know, I was trying to stalk Malik on Facebook before he came in. And I'm like, which Malik am I looking for? You're married to a man named Malik.
Yes.
That is amazing. That is amazing.
I told Evan
this story.
I had to marry myself.
So is McFarley Sample, what was your name growing up here? Malik?
Malik McFarley.
McFarley. And he's yes. Malik Sample?
Yes.
So you guys are both Malik McFarley Sample?
Yep.
At least you have different middle initials.
Right, exactly.
Congratulations on 2 years of marriage.
Thank you very
and Malik,
much.
Malik, you meet so many people throughout the year and they're doing all these great things for the community. I will say this. There's no doubt that you are spreading love in this community, and it's just absolute honor to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you
for being here.
I appreciate
it. Love to be here.
And you want to see him? You want to go out and hang out with him on Sundays or maybe other days? Tell him again where you are, where you worship.
Again, that's 707 East Main Street, every first and third Sunday of the month. Again, 707 East Main Street, and that's at 5:00 p.m.
New Beginnings Christian Fellowship. Thank you, Malik.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pastor Scott Fearing. Great to see you. Thank you, as
Likewise.
Always. All right, short break, and we're changing gears in a big, big way, and you're about to find out at the top of the hour what I mean.